Democrats in the U.S. Senate passed a bill over the weekend that makes some big investments to fight climate change, with some climate advocates saying it would be the most significant action the U.S. has taken on global warming to date. The Inflation Reduction Act includes billions of dollars in investments for the renewable energy industry. It also has tax credits to encourage Americans to do things like buy electric cars and make their homes more energy efficient. The House of Representatives is set to vote on the bill later this week. It's expected to pass there. If it does, some estimates say it would put the U.S. on track to lower greenhouse gas emissions by 40% compared to 2005 levels by the end of this decade. That's close to a target scientists say the world needs to hit to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Are you happy to see this bill moving forward? What do you think about the idea of using incentives to get more renewable energy usage out there? How about the fact that it doesn't include a carbon tax? Do you have a question about what it does and doesn't do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lisa Friedman is a reporter for the New York Times who covers climate and environmental policy. Lisa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to give a listen to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Here he is in a press conference after this act passed the Senate after a long session on Sunday.
The Senate has now passed the most significant bill to fight the climate crisis ever. And it's going to make a difference to my grandkids. The world will be a better place for my grandchildren because of what we did today.
Before we dig into some of the specifics here, Lisa, how big a deal are climate experts saying this thing would be if it in fact gets passed by the House, signed by the president?
A very big deal. And that's both in terms of the emissions cuts and in terms of, you know, finally seeing action from Congress after decades of folks who care deeply about the threat of climate change trying to push lawmakers to take major action.
Yeah, in a recent piece on the history of efforts to pass something on climate change, you mentioned an anecdote about a president getting a report from one of his aides. The president was Richard Nixon. The year was 1969. This is a long time coming. What have been some of the biggest roadblocks to passing something on this scale?
I would say probably first and foremost, a strong, well-financed, concerted effort by the fossil fuel industry to both inject doubt as to the science of climate change and to the severity of climate change. Past that, you've had real deep divisions among lawmakers and the public about the best way to go about addressing climate change.
Now let's look into the specifics. I think a lot of the attention was on kind of the political flurry of activity through the weekend. Let's look at what ended up in here. First of all, what kind of things are there when it comes to alternative energy and the batteries needed to store and use that energy?
Sure. Well, just first to put this bill in context, the president has said he wants to cut U.S. emissions 50 to 52% below 2005 levels, that's the peak of U.S. emissions, by the end of this decade. This bill helps get the U.S. within striking distance of that goal, about 40% below 2005 levels. To get there, this bill doesn't tax industries. It doesn't, penalize polluting industries. It provides incentives in the form of tax breaks, predominantly about $370 billion worth over 10 years for everything from wind and solar development to heat pumps to advanced nuclear and clean hydrogen technology to store carbon from factories and power plants and store carbon dioxide emissions and also to purchase electric vehicles and move away from gas-powered vehicles.
We are talking about the climate change elements of the act just passed by the Senate over the weekend, waiting for a vote in the House later this week. Lisa Friedman is with us from the New York Times, reporter on climate and environmental policy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. With your thoughts on this bill that passed the Senate, your questions about what's in it, maybe what it means to you, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So some of this is big picture, you know, promoting industry, promoting solar panels and things like that. Some of this goes straight to consumers, as I understand it. Lisa, what kind of things would, say, homeowners or car drivers or others be able to look to in this to make decisions in the future?
Yeah, let's start with automobiles, because the tax incentive in here, $7,500 for a new electric vehicle, $4,000 for a used electric vehicle. That is a rebate that, as I understand the legislation, would be one would see at the dealership. You wouldn't have to sort of file your taxes and get that money back. You know, beyond that, for homeowners, there's a home improvement credit for energy efficiency. It would allow households to deduct from their taxes somewhere around 30% of the cost of upgrades, like heat pumps or insulation. There's also a provision to allow households to receive tax breaks if they are installing solar or battery storage systems. So there's a lot of real practical measures in here to entice both businesses and consumers to change the way they power their lives from fossil fuels to cleaner energy sources.
Now, a key figure here was Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. He was a key player in negotiating this thing, and he got some fossil fuel related and drilling related provisions in the bill. What kind of trade-offs did the people who wanted these climate change provisions have to make here?
Yeah, there are concessions in this bill. Senator Manchin has been very clear about his strong support for a gas pipeline in his state, the Mountain Valley Pipeline. He secured a promise from Democratic leaders that a separate bill later this year will include provisions to complete that project, which has been held up with permits and in the courts. In this reconciliation package itself, which couldn't contain the pipeline provision because of the unique way that it's written, there were provisions to ensure that there will be continued oil and gas drilling leasing in the Gulf of Mexico, in Alaska's Cook Inlet, and on federal lands as well. This will essentially make it impossible for President Biden to fulfill a promise he made during the campaign to end new oil and gas leasing on federal lands and waters. It's also something that is really of deep concern to a number of environmental advocates who want to end new fossil fuel development.
Brianna, caller at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I got to tell you, I could not be more excited about what this is going to mean to me in my life and my life, but also for our country and for the state of Wisconsin. This investment in the electrical industry, and I work in the electrical industry, is going to be a good thing, not only for our environment, but it'll be good for innovation. And I've spoken with auto manufacturers at car shows and dealerships themselves, and they're already psyched about getting the infrastructure into people's homes and you know, getting people into these electric cars. You can live in Minneapolis or Chicago and you have a 300-mile range. You could be a commuter and use one of these vehicles for your running your errands, bringing your kids to school. It's very practical and it's going to help our environment. I couldn't be more excited.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I think, Lisa, the hope, and I think this is part of the bill too, is that it goes beyond the commuters and that range. Part of the effort, and this is, there's been some stuff from the Biden administration already, trying to make sure that there's charging and better range for electric vehicles as well.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, you asked me earlier about sort of the history of this, and I would say that, you know, for a long time, those who wanted to address climate change were focused on a tax on carbon, a tax on carbon polluting industries. Increasingly, folks who are working on this issue, and you see from the Biden administration, they decided that the winning strategy was going to be carrots, not sticks, incentives to change the economy, to incentivize, as the caller mentioned innovation, and that seems to have been the key to this working politically, and is certainly leading to a lot of, you know, excitement in clean energy sectors.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. We're talking to Lisa Friedman, reporter for the New York Times, who covers climate and environmental policy, with us today to talk about the climate provisions in the Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act, how meaningful they might be for U.S. efforts to fight climate change. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you've heard and seen about this bill so far? Too far? Not enough? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about legislation from Democrats passed the U.S. Senate, going to the House later this week, part of it making big investments aimed at combating climate change. Lisa Friedman from the New York Times Climate Desk stays with us, and there's still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Dan is with us in Eau Claire. Dan, hi.
Yeah, hi. Just wondering if anybody's looked up how cold will it get after we change to all electric vehicles?
How cold, you said, Dan? Dan, thanks for the call. Lisa, looking at the temperature impact, as I understand it, these changes at this point are slowing down the rate of temperature increase, annual temperature increase, more than cooling it back down. Am I right at this point?
That's right. I mean, a lot of global warming is baked into the atmosphere from decades already of emissions. Slowing down the rate of emissions will in turn slow global warming. The countries under the Paris Agreement and later last year in Glasgow agreed to try to keep global temperature rise from exceeding 1.5 degrees from pre-industrial levels. We're now at about 1.1. So that is the goal of you know, keeping global temperatures below 1.5, which scientists say is a threshold beyond which the consequences of climate change, floods and wildfires and droughts, et cetera, become much more severe.
Thanks for the call. Mary joins us next in West Allis. Mary, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call. Thank you so much for accepting my call. A year ago, I actually called in. We relocated to Lisbon, Portugal, and we hadn't been back for a year. We're back in West Allis now. But I have to tell you how life-changing it is having the European style of travel. We live in the city center. It is our life to use the metro, the buses, the streetcars. Everything is walkable. We live with no car, and probably other than one time have even wanted to have a car. And, you know, as far as like climate change and all of that, you know, getting in an electric car to do your errands when you have such a sprawled out kind of community might be something that electric cars can help, but I think it is really a mindset change.
Mary, welcome back. I do remember your call, I think, when you went to Lisbon. Thanks for checking back in with us. Mary saying, you know, maybe less of a car-centric economy in the first place. Lisa, I don't think that is really part of this bill.
It's not, but I mean, certainly, you know, and yes, of course, you know, urban planning and how we arrange our communities is a much larger conversation and you know and policy issue, but you know, public transportation is better for climate change than even electric cars, and you know, where that's possible, I salute you for being able to do it.
Mary, thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. Sharon joins us now in Minocqua. Sharon, hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for letting me, you know, that's my question, but I also have a comment too. First off, this is wonderful news, and I am wholeheartedly, so I'm actually surprised that this is getting passed in the Senate. Fingers crossed it'll pass in the House. But I do have, you know, if we are to transition off of fossil fuels, it will have ripple effects and impacts on other sectors and other industries. So much of the byproducts of fossil fuels go into things like plastic production, which is essential in many industries like healthcare. And we also produce so much synthetic nitrogen, byproducts of fossil fuels. In addition, coal is still an essential component of steel making. So how do we address those impacts by transitioning off of fossil fuels? Does this act include research and funding for creating those alternatives?
Interesting, Sharon. Thanks for the call. Lisa, I think we think of the energy use of these fossil fuels. Sharon pointing out there's a lot of other stuff they do too. Is this on the radar?
It's certainly on the radar. There is a lot of money in this bill for advanced manufacturing, for research. And I know that the Department of Energy has been doing a lot of research into alternate uses for fossil fuels. I think, you know, one of the other things that that's important to note about this bill is that, as the caller mentioned, you know, there's also a concern about the communities that have been dependent on fossil fuels and that have provided the energy that has powered our country for decades. There is quite a lot of money in this bill, both from, you know, that Senator Manchin and others work to get to help, for example, site renewable energy manufacturing factories in former coal fields. Those kinds of things to make sure that fossil fuel communities are not left behind.
Thanks for that call, Sharon. Cindy joins us next in Belleville. Cindy, hello.
Hello. I'm so glad to talk with you today. As we speak, the solar installers are here at my house installing the panels.
Oh, wow.
So our system does not yet include a battery system. And I'm wondering about the battery incentives that will be coming in this act and when they will be kicking in. And so how long we should wait before planning on adding batteries to our solar system.
Oh, interesting, Cindy. Do we have that kind of timeline on this yet, Lisa?
I have to admit, I don't know the answer to that question on the timeline. There is funding in the bill for battery development, and especially for battery manufacturing, you know, obviously in the U.S., which has been a huge priority of lawmakers. I don't know the timing question for you offhand. I apologize.
Well, Cindy, thanks for the call. And I'm sure when this passes the House and gets signed, they'll start hammering some of that out. Now, we got an email from Matt in Madison who writes, "What good is any of this progress on climate change when Republicans will just nullify it when they take power?" Now, Lisa, there's been a lot of back and forth with executive actions on climate change between Republican and Democratic presidents. Does this nail things down a little more, passing it, assuming it passes the House, passing it through Congress?
It's a great question because, you know, I'm sure that the past many years has been confusing for a lot of people as we've been covering this boomerang of, you know, Obama administration doing X and Trump administration pushing back and doing Y. This, if it indeed passes the House and is signed by the president, will be legislation that, unlike regulation, cannot be easily undone by a president. It would require another act of Congress to undo these measures. You know, once Congress gives something, look at the ACA. It is hard to undo things, even when there is opposition. The bottom line is, if this indeed passes and is signed by the president, it will have a staying power that regulatory efforts have not had and would not have.
One more piece of the puzzle here that came up, and at least some of your coverage on this, Lisa, is what this means for the international climate change scene. You wrote that, in effect, a lot of countries are saying, why are we going to go through the expense of doing this if the United States isn't going to do it? How big an impact could this have on that kind of thinking?
You know, time will have to tell, but you know, it seems very significant. I mean, what, you know, I've been to now 10 UN climate conferences. I've covered Glasgow and the Paris Agreement. And there's been one constant, which is when the U.S. doesn't act, other countries hide behind the United States. And, you know, the biggest emitter now, China, other big emitters, India, Brazil. The excuse of the U.S. not acting won't be there anymore. There will still be questions for the United States. Getting to 40% is not 50. By many arguments, the United States, the biggest historic emitter in the world, should be doing even far more than that. There is money that the U.S. and other developed countries have promised to help the poorest countries move away from fossil fuels themselves. A lot of that has not materialized. So there are still a number of issues in the international arena, but certainly the U.S. now, by all accounts and the folks that I've spoken to, has a much stronger argument to make to other big emitters in trying to get them to step up their ambition.
Lisa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Lisa Friedman, reporter for the New York Times who covers climate and environmental policy. She was with us today to talk about the climate change provisions in the Democratic bill known as the Inflation Reduction Act. It passed the U.S. Senate over the weekend after a marathon session. The U.S. House is scheduled to vote on it later this week, where it's, at least for now, expected to pass.